we can safely see that they're not taking from society. They're actually giving more than they're taking. So in return of them finding their safe haven, as you mentioned earlier, they're actually giving a whole lot more to society. So kudos to them.
The views expressed in this podcast do not represent the views of the Organization of American States, its Secretary General, or its member states. Keep listening to find out more of this episode.
Welcome to the Zone Podcast, a podcast that serves as a platform for constructive dialogue presented by youth from Belize and Guatemala under the coordination of the OAS office in the adjacency zone and with the support of the Spanish Agency for International Development Cooperation. Today's conversation focuses on the issues of migration. We will be discussing in our first segment, migration at the global scale. For this, we will share some data from the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, as the globally mandated organization on issues surrounding refugee law.
That's right. Now, we will be focusing the lens on the region. We will explore migration in Latin America and the Caribbean. As for the closing section, we will be focusing on our countries, Belize and Guatemala. For this, we will relay on data from the System of International Migration in Americas, an initiative of the Organization of American States.
It is great to be having this conversation and sharing important information with our wonderful audience, and we're absolutely honored that you guys are hearing us out on YouTube or wherever it is that you're seeing us. These discussions are necessary to better understand the complex issues of migration, which in Belize, Gisela, I don't know if you know, but Belize is so multicultural thanks to migration from so many people from countries like Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador, even Cuba. And here's the funny part. Some of these countries and the people that would migrate from these countries take up certain roles in society. For example, we all know that Cubans, for the most part, in Belize are doctors. You know, so every time you meet a Cuban person in Belize, I mean, I would automatically assume that they're a doctor. It's not always so, but that's what people would always assume. But first off, did you know that there is no universal accepted definition for the word migrant? For the purpose of this episode, we will have to understand the definitions and differences between refugees, asylum seekers, and internally displaced people, according to the UNHCR, the globally mandated organization on issues surrounding refugee law.
So, the term refugee, according to the international refugee law, is a person who is unable or unwilling to return to their country of origin due to the fear of being persecuted by the reason of race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group, or political opinion.
That is right, that is right. And it's actually very sad to know that you can't return to your country for these reasons. I mean, many a time I've met people, and it's not always because of their race, for the most part. It's not always because of culture, but also because of crime. I don't think we mentioned that here, but crime is also a huge factor that determines whether people want to return back to their countries or not. And again, it all comes from Central American countries. We have Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, predominantly here in Belize. Of course, we also have a minority from Nicaragua, Cuba, and other countries that are not here because of gang war in their countries. But unfortunately, that's what it boils down to. I myself, my parents fled from El Salvador for that very same reason, because at the time, crime was really at its all-time high. So they had to find a better environment for me. Then I wasn't born as yet, you know, so I ended up, being raised as a Belizean child. And I'm very proud of living in Belize because it's a very peaceful country. But unfortunately, that's not the reality of many other people that live in Central America. And the sad part about fleeing is that sometimes refugees and asylum seekers have no more than some clothes and a few of their belongings, leaving homes, jobs, families, and their entire support network behind.
Now, migration figures are alarming. According to the UNHCR statistics, refugees around the world have surpassed the 27.1 million people, while the number of asylum seekers had climbed up to 4.6 million globally.
That is actually a huge, huge number, considering that at least in Belize, we see so many people coming into the country. And we are barely at 400,000 people in population. But I'd like you to share with us, what is the definition of asylum seekers? Because I think we define refugees, but we want to know what asylum seekers are.
Sure, most definitely. No, according to the international refugee law, an asylum seeker is an individual who is seeking international protection. In countries with individualized procedures, an asylum seeker is someone whose claim has not yet been decided by the country where the claim is submitted.
I see. So in other words, we refer to a person who has left their home country and is seeking asylum in another country, correct?
Correct. No, the last term we most know is what we mean by internally displaced person. This is an individual who has been forced or obliged to flee from their home or place of habitual residence due to the push factor, those including the effect of armed conflict, situation of generalized violence, violation of human rights, or natural or human-made disasters, which was what you were mentioning previously.
Right, right. And when you said armed conflicts, I guess we all thought about wars, because there's so many wars, and I think as we speak, there is one going on, very unfortunate, happening. I know a lot of these people flee their home country to another one, seeking you know, some sort of protection because they don't feel safe in their home country. Quite a very unfortunate happening. Because, I mean, can you imagine being at home one day and 3 months later, you're in a totally different country. You have no idea what their cultural practices are. You have no idea what their labor laws are. You have no idea what a good employment is like, what a good salary is like, what to eat, what not to eat. There's so many things that go into place, and it's crazy to even think about it, because I can't think about me living in any other country without being able to adapt to it. You know, I have friends who get scholarships to go and study in Taiwan. You know, that's actually a good thing for them, and they find it really, really hard to actually go to Taiwan, and now it's a totally, totally different culture out there. Also, internally displaced people are those on the run within their own country under the protection of its government, even if that government is the same reason for their displacement. The UNHCR statistics estimate that global forced displacement likely exceeds 89.3 million by mid-2021. So we're in 2022 now, almost the ending of it. So this is about a year ago. But that's quite an alarming number. It's quite a lot. I can only hope and wish that we never find ourselves in that situation.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Now, we really hope our listeners found all those definitions useful, as those are concepts we will be using furthermore exploring the issues of migration and how it affects our countries in Belize and Guatemala and along the adjacent zone. Now, we will be focusing migration of a global context. Data from the UNHCR shows some of the main regions affected by forced displacement.
That is right, Gisela. And according to the UNHCR statistics, 69% of the refugees globally originated from these five countries. The Syrian Arabic Republic, 6.8 billion. Venezuela, 4.6 million. Afghanistan, 2.7 million. South Sudan, 2.4 million, and Myanmar, 1.2 million. And of those, 38% are hosted in just five countries. We have Turkey hosting the largest number of refugees with 3.8 million people. We have Colombia coming in at second place at more than 1.8 million, followed by Uganda, 1.5 million, Pakistan at 1.5 million, and lastly, Germany, 1.3 million people. That's quite a lot.
Now, another shocking figure by the UNHCR statistic is that out of that 89.3 million displaced people globally, 36.5 million are children, and that 83 of the refugees globally are hosted in low and middle income countries.
That's actually a lot, considering the amount of kids that are refugees. You know, the ratio that there is literally. So you said 89.3, that's almost 90 million, and then 36.5. If we round it off to Fateh, then that's almost half the amount of refugees. And that's majority of the time, because people that would flee their country don't flee alone. These are adults, and so if they have kids, then they can't leave their kids behind. So they need to make sure that their kids are safe as well, and they would need to take them. And majority of the time, you know, it's proven that poverty also leads to people not having proper family planning, and so they end up having that one or two or three kids, sometimes four or five. And I've seen it a lot, and statistics would prove that as well. So I guess that's the reason why there are so many kids that are refugees. But I can only hope that these kids are, you know, adapting to these countries, and that it's easy for them because they are kids. As an adult, it's kind of harder. If you have a kid and take him into to a different country, he's gonna grow up as one of you know, those citizens are local, because he doesn't know any difference, as opposed to, you know, his parents who are already grown up. And I'm sure that many of us wonder what motivates someone to leave their home country and become a refugee or an asylum seeker somewhere else.
That's not something easy to answer, as I am sure taking the decision of leaving your support network and home country behind is not an easy decision to take. However, there is no general or accepted definition of drivers of migration. We will explore some of the causal factors that can compel massive migration.
That is right, Gisela. For instance, according to the migration data portal, among the many issues compelling forced displacements are economic reasons, environmental factors, security and violence dynamics, and situation of crisis.
If we analyze the five countries we just mentioned that represent the 69% of the refugees globally, we can understand that some of the major issues affecting them are compelling them to migrate and seek refugees somewhere else.
That's right, Gisela, you're totally right. For instance, the civil war in Syria is in its 11th year. This is 11 years of violence, while the regime changes in Afghanistan compel many Afghans to leave their country. So sometimes in every country, there's always a side that will support the war, and there's the other side that doesn't support it.
I mean, not going too far, we had back in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken, there was an internal armed conflict in Guatemala, and there were many people who migrated either to Belize, El Salvador, or right. Mexico. Similar in South Sudan and Myanmar, social distress and regime change has created a crisis compelling people to flee their countries, seeking a safe haven somewhere else.
That is right. So now, imagining leaving your whole support network behind and land into uncharted territory, what are some of the issues that refugees and migrants must face in their host countries and communities?
So that question is definitely central to our conversation, since there's a lot of stigmatization and xenophobia surrounding the issue of migration. Now, migration is all too often seen as a threat, not an opportunity.
Right. And I think the threat usually is seen more from political parties in the country, yet this is what we're witnessing more and more. Fears over migration are fueling populism and mistrust and undermining the capacity of governments to manage the migration flow. So I think earlier in the podcast I was mentioning, that is where you can see that there's benefits, there's pros and cons. I mean, I think everything has its pros and cons. And it's just a matter of being open-minded to accept the good about it, and to also accept when there's something bad about it. I think often and many at times, people will lead by their emotions and what they feel and what they can relate to because of their, you know, families and where they came from. Unfortunately, this is what happens almost everywhere. People will always look at the bad side more than they would do with the good side.
Thank you so much, and yeah, I totally agree with you. Now, on that note, the International Migration Outlook by the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development shows that in almost all OECD countries, migrants contribute more than they take in social benefits.
That is right, and that's where I can safely say, you know, because these people come with a different skill set in the labor world. So I have friends, and they came from El Salvador, and they know how to bake. And they have a very nice bakery down south. If you ever visit down south where I'm from, I'll take you there. It's really, really nice. That's a special invitation to you, by the way. So it's really good bread, honestly. And these people are migrants, you know. I also have a friend of mine that I went to high school with. His dad owns a carpentry shop. He's really, really good. And throughout the years, this man has actually taught other people in the community how to do tables and how to build basic stuff. And these people have, you know, gone out their way now and learned something extra on top, and it's skills that are being acquired. So, you know, that's where we can safely see that they're not taking from society. They're actually giving more than they're taking. So in return of them finding their safe haven, as you mentioned earlier, they're actually giving a whole lot more to society. So kudos to them.
Well, Nathan, thank you so much for the invitation. I'll definitely have it in mind. Migrants are productive members of society who work, set up business, and have innovative ideas.
You're totally, totally right. Migrants boost the working age population over the past 10 years. They accounted for 47% of the increase in the U.S. workforce and 70% in Europe.
That's right. Now, these migrants also fill up jobs in both fast-growing as well as declining sectors of the economy, including the care of the elderly and health care in general.
Coming up, we will discuss migration in Latin America and the Caribbean and in our countries, Belize and Guatemala.
No, before that, we want to leave you with the following material highlighting the experience of integration of the refugees and migrants in Belize. Stay tuned.
Sí, mire, eso casi no me gusta hablar a mí porque me da mucha tristeza, tita. Vino en la tarde, pues vino de cobrar y se fue para allí. Nomás hay un chino que vende pollo. Cuando él ya viene, le dan aquí por detrás, ¿ves? Que fue que le agarraron todo esto aquí.
Ese eran porrazos, que eran como $3,000, $4,000. ¿Qué? ¿De dónde podíamos? No. Tenía mi pitillo. Nada. Mira. Hasta ahí llegó. Aquí está, mira. Por eso que yo hablo así. Mi nombre es Pedro Flores Redondo. Venimos de allá de Honduras. Venía de para acá de estos lados a poder trabajar. Y así que luego que me quedé aquí, pues aquí yo me siento tan bien, más que me están ayudando la gente. Y aquí hay frijoles, hay arroz. Pues es tan bueno aquí para trabajar y ¿cómo se llama? Pues no hay trabajo allá. Y aquí pude hallar trabajo. Toda la finca estuve trabajando en la 1, la 2, la 3. De allí fue cuando ya me vine para acá, la finca 6. Y trabajé 18 años.
Los migrantes tienen una gran contribución positiva al país. La mano de obra es muy esencial. Hay ciertas prácticas que deben estar cíclicas, tienen su periodo y tiene que estarse haciendo a tiempo. Y muchas veces tal vez no se logra completar en el debido tiempo debido a falta de mano de obra. Entonces ahí juegan un papel muy importante y contribuyen positivamente porque la producción se logra sacar a tiempo, con buena calidad, que es el objetivo. El señor Pedro Flores lo tengo muy, muy en cuenta en mi historia. Él forma parte de la historia mía. El primer persona que me encontré en campo que iba a estar trabajando al lado mío era don Pedro. Él era el cortero y yo era el juntero, el que cargaba el racimo. No se me olvidan las palabras que él me decía. ¿Ves cómo es de duro trabajar aquí? Es duro. Estudia, anda al colegio y aprende algo más. Y siempre regresate al banano.
A big community with a lot of people that have come from neighboring countries for one reason or the other. Many have been here for many years, a whole generation, I would say. And some of the needs are that they need to get their papers in order. We still have people here that are not regularized. People who have been on work permits, for example, for 10 years, 15 years, more, and they have made their life here. They are not thinking about going back to Honduras or El Salvador or where they came from. So it would be a big help for them if they move on and get their temporary permits for staying in Belize and eventually their Belize nationality.
El señor Flores es una persona de tercera edad y él hemos estado ayudando en llenar los requisitos para la residencia porque él está aplicando para residencia. Le hemos ayudado también en las traducciones. Nosotros pagamos el costo de las traducciones. También hemos ayudado en pagar unas extensiones que él no ha podido pagar y también le hemos ayudado a sacar su permiso de dependiente. Y también en los exámenes médicos, también ayudamos en eso.
What we want to bring across is the fact that Mr. Pedro gave 25 years of his life to this country working in the banana industry. That's an industry that contributes a lot to Belize's foreign exchange, and it's predominantly run by migrants. So for us, that was important to show that people like him have given a tremendous contribution to Belize, doing this sort of work, which Belizeans shy away from doing. And he has done this consecutively for almost 25 years. So we want to say thanks to Mr. Pedro. We appreciate what he has done for the country, and we do wish him well in his application for permanent residence.
Al mirar que tantos años que yo estoy aquí, pensando que él es mío, ¿verdad? De ir a tres, yo no podía. Ahora yo me siento bien. Yo creo que hasta voy a llorar, porque nunca he llorado.
Yo sé que el único que está moviendo aquí corazones es nuestro Padre Celestial, que es el Padre de nosotros, de todos. Porque yo, eso es lo único que yo he hecho, orar y orar por mí, por él y por mis hijos. Y yo sé que por medio del Señor es que los ha tocado a ustedes y el Señor es que pone la semilla de mostaza para que nosotros hayamos logrado este proceso que estamos haciendo.
What a great video that demonstrates the stories of local migrants in Belize created by one of the organizations that we will be talking about shortly.
The World Bank also highlights the movement of persons from the Northern Triangle of Central America to the United States, which has been taking place for a much longer time. Between 1980 and 2015, the number of migrants from the subregion who were living in the United States increased by an annual percentage of 8%. And in 2017, their total number in the United States stood up 3 million.
That's quite a lot, Gisela. And among the reasons compelling these movement of people are the shortage of good jobs, high rates of crime and violence, and the desire to be reunited with their families.
With the movement of persons comes the challenges and opportunities for both the source and destination areas, as we mentioned before.
That is right. And you know, earlier I was speaking about the pros and cons, and that's the challenges and opportunities of the destination that these people are going to. But I totally disregarded the source and where they are coming from, because then that also has some sort of negative impact in their country. Because let's put it into this perspective. If that country is already a low-populated country. Belize, for example, 400,000 people, that's quite a very small population. I'm not 100% sure, sorry, if it's the smallest in Central America. But what I do know is a lot of Belizeans, their dream is to leave to the United States. So that leaves the workforce in Belize a little bit smaller. And that is also considering that Belize's population is already a very young one. So experience is lacking in many, many areas. But switching the lens now towards Belize and Guatemala, we will be using some data from the Continuous Reporting System on International Migration in the Americas, an initiative by the Organization of the American States to understand the issues of migration in our home countries.
According to this initiative, immigration in Guatemala has more than doubled since 2010, By 2013, Guatemala received the entry of more than 1,000 permanent immigrants and doubled that number of temporary immigrants.
But immigration flows from Guatemala decreased by 8% between 2009 and 2012. In addition, changes were observed in the main destinations of Guatemalans. While most still go to the United States, movements to Canada have shown a growing trend up to 22%, while flows to Mexico and Spain have decreased considerably by 61 and 21% respectively.
So the number of asylum seekers in Guatemala is very small, with only 48 cases for 2013. Coming mainly from El Salvador, India, and Bangladesh. In turn, that same year, the country housed 160 refugees from the neighborhood country of Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Honduras.
Now, for the case of Belize, according to these statistics, Belize is the Central American country that has received the most immigration since its independence in the early 1980s. Mm-hmm. Immigration in 2011 stood at 4.3 per thousand in population, approximately the same relative level as Barbados.
The main country of destination for Belizean immigrants is the United States, where almost three quarters of them live. Although the numbers are still low, Canada with a 7%, and the Russian Federation with 4% have become emerging destinations countries in recent years.
That is right, and the number of asylum applications in Belize is extremely low. By 2013, Belize received 52 asylum applications from citizens of El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, and in the same year, only 21 refugees resided in the country, all from El Salvador. Now, this here, we're speaking about legal refugees. These are people that are legally in the country. There's also a vast majority of people, especially in the southern part of Belize, that are living without, you know, with proper legal documents. And I know that there's an amnesty program that is going on at this point as we speak. And this program is also assisting these people that are, you know, living in Belize illegally. I have a couple of friends that I know are taking advantage of the amnesty program. Kudos to the Belizean government for doing something like that, because many a times these are people who have lived so much, so long in this country, already have kids, Belizean kids, and, you know, they can't be forced to go back to El Salvador at this point. It's too late. They've made their lives here. So the country is finding a way to, you know, render a helping hand.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that. And I do believe this has been a very informative segment to get to know more about the issue of immigration in our region and in our home countries.
I agree. And what do you think if now we dive into the work done by some organizations in our countries regarding migration?
Sure thing. We'll be sharing with our audience about the work done by the International Organization of Migration in Belize.
They are the leading intergovernmental organization in the field of migration. Some of their most recent activities include mobile migrant hubs that are available in different villages on different dates to provide immigration information and social services to these remote communities, such as Valley of Peace in Cayo and Bella Vista in Toledo. Now, what are we doing in Guatemala to provide aid to these refugees?
In terms of NGOs in Guatemala, we have the case of El Refugio de la Niñez, which works in favor of human rights of children and adolescents. They are the only center specialized in the protection of victims of human trafficking at the national level, with a focus on rights, gender, and cultural relevance. El Refugio de la Niñez developed some innovative practices, such as their mobile emergency protection program, which were developed as a humanitarian response to population in condition of risk and vulnerability. Through this method, they seek to restore the rights and resilience capacities that refugees and asylum seekers are most in need of.
Coming up, we bring you an informative section of another issue tied to migration, as unaccompanied minors make for a high percentage of asylum seekers and trafficked persons. And when we return, we will finish up today's conversation on migration.
Sabes que toda mi vida he trabajado en el campo. Cultivé muchas cosas, pero nunca tomates. Al principio me dijeron que estaba loco. Pero ya sabes que yo soy un hombre que siempre se la ha jugado. No me importa si son tomates o lo que tenga que hacer. existe un mejor futuro, haría cualquier cosa. Pero por ahora, lo único que puedo hacer es esperar. Sé que el viaje es duro, pero tenés que aguantar. Tienes que aguantar, mijo. Ya mero estaremos juntos acá en los Estados.
As we get closer to the end of this episode, it is always great to look at creative ideas that companies and people have implemented to support the integration of refugees and migrants into their host societies. The one that comes into my mind is Open Homes, which is an Airbnb project that allows volunteer hosts to open their homes to refugees and displaced people without charge.
You know, and considering that it's an Airbnb project, you might think that it's for a profit, but in this case, it's free of charge, you know, trying to help the people that are displaced. And many a time, these people are minors, as you mentioned earlier. So you and I can help refugees integrate into society, basically, because if we open our doors to these people via the Airbnb project, then we are directly assisting them. For example, let's say I'm great at speaking and writing English, and I can offer free classes to asylum seekers in Belize during their long wait for the refugee status to be determined. That is a way that I can use to help these people, you know, by us using our very own skills and sharing them with them. I can point to many scholarships given by different companies in Belize. One of the requisites, and they say it, you need to be a Belizean. And so that basically puts everyone else that is not a Belizean, you know, basically you get discarded if you were to apply, because you need to be Belizean. And so it makes it even harder for these refugees to get an education, because then now they are paying everything out of their pockets. Quite unfortunate, because many at times these people also become very productive citizens, and I believe that they should also be given an equal opportunity to secure their studies. And there are different activities and programs to help the migrant population in our communities that can be undertaken by NGOs. Some of them include recruitment and employment facilities, migration training programs, migration health assessments, travel assistance services, and migration health assistance to crisis-affected populations.
Additionally, we have seen the power of information, which is why children in migration must be informed about their right, as it is crucial for having their voice heard and enabling them to participate in fighting for issues affecting them.
You're totally right. Having your human rights in mind is always very important, you know, even in other countries, because the human rights and the Declaration of Human Rights were universal. And also remember that it's important to combat misinformation surrounding the migration and refugees' rights. The media has an essential role to play, but we must also ensure that it reflects the complexity and diversity of migration experiences, which can lead to public antagonism towards migration and can risk efforts to adopt migration policies.
We also urge you to remain engaged and aware of this issue, and to be understanding as migration will continue to evolve.
That is right, Gisela. And despite these new trends, having to restart one's life in another country has its obstacles, such as unemployment, racism, language barriers, and lack of opportunities in general. This was another great conversation. I hope this knowledge empowers our viewers to continue talking about these issues and further ask themselves, what can be done to be of service to refugees that need guidance to incorporate themselves in society? You know, do you have the skills to help these people overcome their language barriers? Do you have the skills to promote, you know, no racism against these people? Do you have the skills, or do you have the authority to help them to get their legal refugee status in your country? Whatever it is that you have in your power, I invite all our viewers, everyone that's listening to us from home or wherever it is that you're watching this podcast from, to use your voice, to use your authority, to use your power in the most positive way that you can to help these people.
Yes, most definitely. You know, this episode wouldn't have been possible without the support of the Spanish Agency for International Development Cooperation and the Organization of American States for the Space of Dialogue between Youth of Belize and Guatemala.
We would like to remind you that on our Twitter, which is at @OEA_BelizeGuate, you will be able to stay up to date with everything that's happening in the adjacency zone.
We invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel as we put a lot of effort in creating each episode for you.
That's right. There's a lot of work into this.
Goodbye.